WHYY is proudly supported by Penn Medicine. From groundbreaking discoveries to life-saving care, Penn Medicine's innovation is helping to change lives, one moment, one treatment, one patient at a time.
This is Fresh Air. Since the early waves of immigration in the 19th century, immigrants have been blamed for bringing diseases into this country. Throughout history, native-born Americans have used disease as one of the reasons to ostracize newcomers. Italians were blamed for the polio epidemic of 1915. Earlier in the century, TB was called the Jewish disease. And more recently, Haitians have been stigmatized as carriers of the AIDS virus. Alan Crowd has traced the history of these attitudes in a new book called Silent Travelers, Germs, Genes, and the, quote, immigrant menace. He details stories of medical and health prejudice and shows how it shaped politics and the delivery of health services. When the European settlers first came to North America, they brought diseases with them that ravaged the Indian population. I asked Crowd how the Europeans explained what was going on.
Well, the European settlers, of course, watched with horror as the diseases they brought devastated the Native American population. And they explained to themselves what was going on by saying that God was clearing the way for better stock. They really justified what they saw in front of them as being the will of God and took it as a blessing on their own activities and their own endeavors in settling and moving the Indians, of course, off of their land and so on. One of the interesting things as well is that the Indians sometimes interpreted it that way too, and that is that for whatever reason they had offended their deities and that this was the price they were paying.
How did that attitude change in the 19th and 20th century when American citizens greeted new immigrants on this land?
The notion that somehow disease was an act of God being visited upon people who were unworthy didn't change quickly. And in 1832, there was a terrible cholera epidemic that swept the east coast of the United States. And the Irish, which the immigrant group that was coming in largest numbers during this period, were blamed for bringing the scourge to the land. And the assumption was, and so many Irish were coming down with cholera, that somehow this was God's way of punishing the Irish for being uncleanly, immoral, indecent, and so on. And that, of course, was a native-born Protestant interpretation of what was happening to these Irish Catholic immigrants. And the transition to a more scientific, less morally loaded definition of disease occurs very, very slowly throughout the 19th and into the early 20th century, and it never goes away completely. From time to time, there's still always that assumption that people have done something wrong and deserve the disease that they've contracted.
Was there any evidence that the Irish brought cholera to the United States?
No, certainly not because they were Irish. And indeed, during this period, cholera was moving across the face of Europe. And in fact, cholera probably came to the United States aboard a sailing ship, either from immigrants or sailors, and reached the United States that way as it had already other European ports. So it's certainly true that cholera came from abroad and then was nurtured here, of course, by our own circumstances in overcrowded and filth-ridden urban areas. But disease doesn't come from filth. It comes from microbes. They didn't know that at the time. But, of course, that was a very, very important part of the story.
Were all immigrant groups seen as carriers of diseases?
It's sort of periodic moments when an immigrant group is stigmatized and accused of bringing a particular kind of disease. In 1900, there was an episode of bubonic plague in San Francisco, and so there was an incredible backlash against the Chinese because the first case of bubonic plague was found in San Francisco's Chinatown. And so the Chinese became associated in the public mind, and especially the public mind in California, with bubonic plague. In 1916, the summer of 1916, there was a terrible epidemic of polio along the east coast of the United States. It hit New York City, Philadelphia particularly hard. And the story was that polio had come with Italian immigrants who were pouring into east coast cities during this period. The Eastern European Jews were often associated with tuberculosis, which was sometimes called the Jewish disease and other times called the Taylor's disease. And so the Jews were stigmatized as the bearers of tuberculosis and the spreaders of tuberculosis, even though, in fact, Jewish rates of contracting TB and mortality from TB were actually lower than in the general population.
Well, I want to talk some more, but first we have to take a short break. And my guest is Alan Kraut, and he's written a book called Silent Travelers, and it's about the fears and prejudices that immigrants faced, many of them seen as carriers of contagious disease. And he looks at immigration policy and healthcare through the 19th and 20th century. We'll be back after a short break. This is Fresh Air. I'm speaking with Alan Kraut. His new book is called Silent Travelers, Germs, Genes, and the, quote, immigrant menace. Well, looking at the end of the 19th century, beginning of the 20th century, what did medicine, what did science understand about contagion, about germs, about illness?
Well, of course, there had been an enormous transformation during the course of the 19th century. Early in the 19th century, the belief was that disease came from decaying organic matter, effluvia. By the middle of the 19th century, the sanitarium theory was beginning to capture the imagination, and that is that dirt, filth, was associated with disease. That's where the origins of disease were. It wasn't until the late 19th century, really until the 1880s, in the work of Robert Koch in Germany, Pasteur in France, that it became very, very clear that the source of disease were microorganisms. And germ theory then captures the mind of American medical science, and we see this translated into public policy and immigration policy in a place like Ellis Island, because in the 1890s, after Ellis Island opened in 1892, U.S. Public Health Service physicians were, in a sense, on a hunt for germs, trying to keep harmful germs out of the United States, trying to keep immigrants out of the United States who might infect the American population with diseases, cause epidemics, and at the same time trying to keep out of the United States immigrants who might be so enfeebled themselves by disease and disability that they'd be unable to support themselves.
How would they hunt down diseases in Ellis Island? How sophisticated was their technology?
Well, at first, the technology was not terribly sophisticated. They were doing what physicians did all across the Western world, and that is look, observe, question, and at times touch for particular diseases. Two diseases that they were particularly concerned about was trachoma, a contagious disease of the eyes, which if untreated could lead to blindness, and phavus, a dermatological disease characterized by scabby sores in the scalp. And so Public Health Service physicians, it was then not called the U.S. Public Health Service, but the U.S. Marine Hospital Service, would inspect immigrants coming in the line inspection for trachoma by everting the immigrant's eyelid and looking for sores on the underside of the eyelid. The problem was that there was no instrument available for really doing that, and it was a very threatening and uncomfortable kind of process. And so this was regarded by many immigrants as one of the worst parts of the processing on Ellis Island, was passing in front of this U.S. Public Health Service physician, a uniformed physician, who brought you toward him and produced a button hook, the same kind of hook that was used to button ladies' high-top shoes. And the immigrant's eyelid would be folded across the button hook, a quick examination for those sores. If they weren't there, the eyelid was turned down again. But this was quite a moment for many immigrants. It was a very threatening, very uncomfortable moment.
Did the doctors there sanitize the instruments? Did they wash their hands after inspecting each person on Ellis Island?
The button hook was wiped with a Lysol-impregnated rag. And in a number of the photographs, including one that I include in Silent Travelers, you can see the Lysol-impregnated rag sort of draped over a railing near where the physician is standing, and it doesn't look like it would be terribly effective. But it must have been, or there must have been mighty few cases of trachoma, because in fact, we would have had an enormous outbreak had we just depended on this Lysol-impregnated rag.
Looking back at the time, would you say that politicians played on the public's fears of immigrants?
Yeah, I think there's no question about the fact that politicians of the era often played on the public's fear that immigrants were endangering the public health. We see this a great deal in 1900 in San Francisco in the bubonic plague outbreak. The mayor of San Francisco, Mayor Phelan, was, of course, very concerned that San Francisco would be marked as a plague spot, that people would stop coming there, that investors would not want to place their money there, make investments, create jobs, and so on. And so Phelan was very, very concerned about defining a public health risk as a Chinese problem, not one associated with the rest of the population. And so the quarantine was focused on the Chinese. And of course, there was this one absurd episode where all of Chinatown was roped off in an effort to stop the bubonic plague from spreading across the city. Politicians in other parts of the country played this prejudice card as well from time to time, singling out particular groups and trying to rally support to their side against these groups.
Well, we spent most of the time talking about the downside of immigrant policy. What would you say got developed out of immigration to this country? And you've touched on it about the development of some kind of public health policies. What specifically grew out of all this?
We see a great deal more cultural sensitivity and understanding and respect for traditional forms of medicine. I'm thinking specifically of a program in St. Paul, Minnesota, that combined physicians with traditional healers of the Hmong group in an effort to get Hmong tribesmen who came to the United States to accept Western therapies or a synthesis of Western therapy and their own traditional therapies. In an earlier generation, they would simply have been told that their own traditional therapies were useless. They would have been shown a complete lack of respect, and Western therapies might have been forced on them, or else they would have been excluded from medical care altogether. That's not the case today.
I'm thinking, though, of the treatment of Haitians, and certainly Haitians who tested positive for HIV, many of them quarantined at Guantanamo Bay. Would you say, though, that's the exception to the upside that you were just describing?
I think what we saw happen at Guantanamo Bay, where 140 Haitian refugees were held until finally a federal judge ordered their release, HIV-positive refugees, the government didn't know what to do with them. Question was, should they be admitted? Should they be sent back? And they were just continually held. This suggests to me the kind of confusion, the kind of vacuum in public policy that we're seeing today, and the kind of internal conflict that the society is engaged in once again over how exactly to treat immigrants and what the proper balance ought to be between the rights of newcomers and protecting public health.
But it seems that some immigrant groups are seen as less desirable, Haitians being one of them.
There is no question, in my mind at least, that today, as in the past, immigrant groups have always fallen into a kind of hierarchical situation. Some groups, for racial reasons, for religious reasons, are less acceptable to Americans than other groups. And right now, I think in seeing how the Haitians have been treated, we're watching a certain manifestation of a kind of racism. That, plus the political turmoil that's going on in Haiti and the confusion over that, I think has led to some of the atrocious treatment that the Haitians have received.
Alan Krout's book is called Silent Travelers.